Okay, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome. And get ready for this. Happy New Year. I posted this the other day on the United Israel site. Some of you may or may not be familiar with the fact that, or the idea put forward in the Mishnah in Tractate Rosh Hashanah, that there are four New Years according to various legal decisions that are enumerated in that tractate. This happens to mark the New Year for trees is what it's called. Now, you might say, well, it's not biblical. Ross, you're a biblical guy. But I do like to mark time in many ways. You know, time is very precious, and there are some interesting things. You might be surprised if you go in and you begin to study this particular New Year. I'm not teaching on that today. But I couldn't help but notice as I pulled out of my driveway this morning the beautiful leaves on my what looks like a dead fig tree. The beautiful green is beginning to come out. We have azaleas in bloom. The pear trees in my neighbor's field are beginning to blossom. And so this particular time of season, if you notice, the trees are beginning to come to life, at least here in the South. So, Happy New Year for what it's worth. We do have one other announcement I wanted to make, and that is that our conference here in St. Francisville is scheduled for the last weekend of April, April 28th, which is a Friday. The 29th is Saturday, and Sunday is the 30th. James Tabor and Ralph Bunton and Dave and Patty Tyler and I, and of course our local congregation here, we are greatly looking forward to many of you coming here to Louisiana. You can find the registration form online, and it gives several different options to stay. We have a couple of special guests who are coming in, aside from all of you wonderful people. Special speaker that I'm not at liberty to announce just yet. We're still working out those travel arrangements, but I look forward to bringing that announcement to you in the next few days. So if you have not already signed up, we're asking people to register as soon as possible because that helps us plan. It lets Sherry know how many snacks to prepare and so forth. But we really do want to know as soon as we can. So if you're going to come, if you think you're going to come, go to the website, unitedisrael.org, register. You will not be disappointed. I assure you this conference is going to be wonderful. Looks like we are going to have to plan to use Temple Sinai Synagogue, the Jewish synagogue here in our town that is otherwise not used. It was built in 1901 by Jewish residents here in the parish at the time. Since that time, all have moved off. But we can utilize the building, and I think that's what we'll have to do in order to accommodate the number of people who generally come to these conferences. So, April 28th, 29th, and 30th here in St. Francisville. Please register online. If you have not done so, take some time this weekend and let us know that you're coming. So we appreciate that. Okay. Everyone ready to do some Bible study? All right. We just completed our series on Noah, and this week we will continue to work our way through the Torah according to this ancient triennial Torah cycle of readings, whereby the ancients would work through the entire Pentateuch in the five books attributed to Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. They would work through this a section at a time, and within a period of approximately 3 to 3.5 years, they would have covered the entirety of the Torah. And that's why we call it the triennial cycle, because it is associated with 3 years. All right, we have shown, sort of leading up to today's class, I wanted to make a point. One of the things that we've shown is that our narrator, now according to tradition, this is Moses, according to modern biblical scholarship, they would refer to the one who's doing this as the final redactor. But in any event, we get this transition that takes place through various periods in our story through a conventional practice. In other words, this person's pen records a certain phrase that carries us along thus far through these stories. And that transitional phrase is ele toldot. Ele toldot. It's translated generally in translations as these are the generations. These are the generations. In the Transparent English Bible, you will find it consistently translated slightly differently, but it's these are the bringings forth. Because in Hebrew, especially in this translation where we're attempting to make a transparent view from the English into the Hebrew, whenever you see this word toledot, it's based on this root word yalad, which means to bear or to bring forth. So a boy is called a yeled, a girl is called a yalda. You notice the similarity in the words, because one is simply a masculine that's brought forth, one is a feminine. In this case, what the author is trying to tell us is these are the bringings forth of something. Now, so far, this convention has been used throughout the text. The references would be Genesis chapter 2, verse 4, Genesis 5, verse 1, Genesis 6, verse 9, Genesis 10, verse 1, Genesis 11, verse 10, and then in our last class, we had one more that leads us into today, and that is chapter 11, verse 27. Each of these uses this transitional phrase in one form or another. These are the bringings forth. Now, in the very beginning, we had these are the bringings forth of the skies and the earth when they were created. And we utilized that transitional phrase to teach a class. Then we had this is the book of the bringings forth of soil creature or Adam. And that would be in Genesis chapter 5, verse 1. In chapter 6, verse 9, we had Ele toldot Noah. These are the bringings forth of Noah. Noah being a just man, whole and complete in his life cycles, and one who walked about with the Elohim. Like, by the way, like Enoch before him. One of the things that you'll notice as we work through these texts is that there are certain key themes which really stand out. There are certain things that we learn about these heroes, if you will, these people within the epic as we work through that truly stand out. We're going to look at those things for common points and so forth. Then as we work through Genesis, we came to these are the generations of the B'nai Noach, the sons of Noah, and then of Shem. Shem, through whom we once again are forced to narrow our focus. You know, it's interesting because in the biblical stories, especially in the early chapters of Genesis, we begin with Adam. But Adam represents all of humanity in a way. And by the 10th generation, we begin to narrow our focus towards one man and his story. This one man, Noah, who is righteous among his peers. So it's an expanding and a contracting, and then we're focusing on the key personalities that I think that we are supposed to look at. And then through Shem, once we get to the sons of Noah, we have three sons mentioned in the last few weeks. We talked about Ham, Shem, and Japhet. Ham, of course, is cursed, as it were. He basically loses place in terms of blessing. Japhet, when we study Japhet, though he receives more of a blessing than anything, his blessing is more associated with his association with Shem. In other words, you'll recall the wording there. It basically says that Japhet, will be in the tents of Shem. Interesting phrase, by the way. And then when we follow Shem's list of descendants, we come to the latest employment of this scribal phrase, Ele Toldot, this marker, if you will. And we are introduced in our last reading, we're going to go back and pick up a few lines. We're introduced to one named Terah. Terah. Beginning with the white space, if you have your transparent English version number 7, which contains chapter 11 of Genesis. If not, you can look at a standard English translation or follow along in the Hebrew if you're able to do so. But we are going to Genesis chapter 11, beginning in verse 26. We're following the white space here. And it says the following. And Terah lived 70 years, and he brought forth Avram, Nahor, and Haran. Here we go. And these are the bringings forth of Terah. In your translation, your English translation may say, these are the generations of Terah. What I want you to do is, as we work through these, if you mark in your Bible, carefully note these transitional periods, because it's indicating to us what we need to focus on. It's pretty easy to teach the Bible when you do this. It says, Terah brought forth Avram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran brought forth Lot. Haran died upon the face of Terah's father in the land of those brought forth of his in Ur of the Chaldeans. And Avram took and Nahor for themselves women. The name of the woman of Avram was Sarai. The name of the woman of Nahor was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, the father of Iscah. And Sarai was barren, there was not to her a child. And Terah took Avram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, son of his son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, woman of Avram, his son, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to walk land of Canaanward. I'll explain. And they came unto Haran, and they sat there. And the days of Terah were 5 years and 200 years, and Terah died in Haran. We learn here that Terah has three sons named Avram, Nahor, and Haran. And we also learn that Haran has a son whose name is Lot. We're going to get into these stories and develop these characters as we work through. We learned that they originate from a place called Ur of the Chaldees, or Ur of the Chaldeans. Now, I just want to make sure as we work through this, one of the beauties of taking these smaller sections is that we can dig into meanings and get a little more out of it. So everyone who studies the Bible has heard of Ur of the Chaldeans. I brought you forth, we're going to talk about this, from Ur of the Chaldeans. Whenever we study the etymology, when we study the source of these words, this word Ur is very similar and believed by linguists to be related to this Semitic root, Ir, which means a city, basically. So some of you know that there are many place names in Israel with this particular word, Ir, Ir Ovot, which is a place that Dave and I just spent 21 days in the desert there, right, Dave? So Ir, Ur, it means city. And so the idea, at least when I read that, when I read in the Hebrew, I think about this represents, put in all caps, T-H-E, the city of the Chaldeans. This is a city. This is what we might call a, let's call it a Mesopotamian metropolis. It's a cultural center, if you will. Great culture for its time. And remember now, Chaldee represents Babylon. So what we have is our focus based on the scribal transition is we're going to start taking the reader and we're going to focus them on this place of high culture, Ur of the Chaldees, and on a man by the name of Terah, who has three sons. Now, what we learn in what I just read is that Haran, according to the narrative, he dies. All right, so one of the three sons of Terah dies. Now, what that does is, if you remember, Haran's son is named Lot. So he goes with his uncle Avram, Uncle Abe. All right, you can put that in your notes. So Terah and his relatives, they leave Ur, and their family is beginning to grow, according to the story. Because by this point, you have the two boys that are remaining, Avram and Nahor, and they find women. And they take these women. Avram, his wife, is named Sarai. And the interesting part of the story that begins to build, act like you don't know what's going to happen. She's barren. She can't have children. So you already have a crisis in the family, at least according to Avram's line. It's going to take a miracle here, right? So the writer wants us to get into this, like, oh, she's barren. So that sort of sets up the stage for some things that are coming later. Nahor has Milcah, his uncle's daughter, by the way. And so Terah brings his two living sons, Avram and Nahor, and their women, and his grandson Lot, which is the son of his deceased son, Haran, and they go, according to the TEB, the Transparent English Bible, it says they go Canaanward. Now, what Tabor is trying to capture that is that in the Hebrew here, there is what is called it's called variously, but I've read it called a hey locative. And I'm getting into a little bit here because I want you to see. I'll give you an example. Everyone knows this phrase, but you, Bethlehem Ephratah, though you are small among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me. What? All right, now look, whenever we say Bethlehem, that's a place. It also could be a family, as we've shown in the past. But Bethlehem Ephrat is the name of the place. So in Genesis 35, it talks about Jacob and Rachel and the family, and they're moving along, and it says they go to Bethlehem Ephrat. In Hebrew, it's Ephratah, and that means towards Ephrat. Okay, towards Ephrat. In other words, it's like, go to St. Francisville towards Commerce Street. It's a very specific, it's locative. It puts you in a particular place. The reason I'm bringing that up is because you might say, well, when I read this translation, why didn't it just say to Canaan? Because the language there is that it says that it's going towards the land of, land in Hebrew, land or ground is Eretz. This is Artsah, towards the land of Canaan. So it's Canaanward. All right, so you got your little, the reasoning behind the literalness there. That's just something I wanted to bring up. So the family, we're talking about, these are the bringings forth of Terah. And the family is now moved into this place called Haran, right? And I want to pick up here, if you will join me, and I will read this particular Torah reading. We begin in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, and it's roughly a little more than a chapter, to Genesis 13, verse 18. And Jehovah said toward Avram, walk for yourself from your land, from those brought forth of yours, and from the house of your father, toward the land that I will make you see. And I will make you for a large nation. And I will bless you, and I will make your name large, and you will be a blessing. And I will bless those blessing you, and the one treating you lightly I will curse. Blessed in you will be all the families of the soil. And Avram walked as Jehovah spoke to him, and Lot walked with him. And Avram was a son of 5 years and 70 years, and is going out from Haran. Avram took Sarai, his woman, and Lot, son of his brother, and all their gathered property that they had gathered, and the life breathers that they made in Haran. And they went out to walk land of Canaanward. And they came land of Canaanward, and Avram passed over through the land unto the place of Shechem, unto the oak of Moreh. And the Canaanite was then in the land. And Jehovah was seen toward Avram, and he said, to your seed I will give this land. And he built there a slaughter place to Jehovah, the one who was seen toward him. And he moved on from there toward the mountain at the east of Bethel, and he stretched out his tent, Bethel at the west, and Ai on the east, built there a slaughter place to Jehovah, and called in the name of Jehovah. Avram pulled up stakes, walking and pulling up stakes, Negevward. There's that again, right? And there was a hunger in the land, and Avram went down Egyptward to sojourn there. For weighty was the hunger in the land, and it was, as he came near, to come Egyptward, that he said towards Sarai, his woman, look, please, I know that a woman beautiful of sight you are, and it will be that the Egyptians will see you, and they will say, his woman is this one, and they will kill me, and you they will let live. Say, please, my sister you are, so that it will be good to me on account of you, and my life breath may live for your sake. And it was as Avram came Egyptward that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was exceedingly beautiful, and the chiefs of Pharaoh saw her, and they praised her towards Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into the house of Pharaoh. And Avram, he did good on account of her, and there was to him flock and herd and donkeys and servants and house servants and female donkeys and camels. And Jehovah touched Pharaoh with large touches in his house because of the matter of Sarai, woman of Avram. And Pharaoh called to Avram, and he said, what is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell to me that your woman she is? Why did you say my sister she is? And I took her to me for a woman. And now look, your woman, take her and walk. And Pharaoh charged men concerning him, and they sent him and his woman and all that was to him. And Avram went up from Egypt, he and his woman and all that was to him, and Lot with him, Negevward. And Avram was exceedingly weighty in acquired livestock, in silver and gold, and he walked for his pulling up stakes from the Negev and unto Bethel, unto the place that there his tent was in the beginning, between Bethel and between Ai, toward the place of the slaughter place that he had made there at the first. And Avram called there in the name of Jehovah. And there was also to Lot, the one walking with Avram, flock and herd and tents, and the land could not lift them sitting as one, for their gathered property was abundant, and they were not able to sit as one. And it was a contention between the ones pasturing the acquired livestock of Avram and between the ones pasturing the acquired livestock of Lot. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite were sitting then in the land. And Avram said toward Lot, let there not be pleased contention between me and between you, and between my pasturing ones and between your pasturing ones. For men, brothers are we. Is not all the land before your face? Be separated, please, from me, if to the left, and I go to the right, and if to the right, and I go to the left. And Lot lifted his eyes and saw the circuit of the Jordan, and there it was, completely watered, before Jehovah ruined Sodom and Gomorrah, as the garden of Jehovah, as the land of Egypt in your coming towards Zoar. And Lot chose for himself all the circuit of the Jordan, and Lot pulled up stakes from the east, and they were separated, a man from upon his brother. Avram sat in the land of Canaan, and Lot sat in the cities of the circuit, and he tented unto Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were bad and errant against Jehovah exceedingly. And Jehovah said to Avram, after the separation of Lot from him, lift up, please, your eyes and see from the place there where you are, northward and Negevward and eastward and seaward. For all the land that you are seeing, I will give it to you and to your seed until an age. And I will place your seed as the dust of the land, so that if a man is able to count the dust of the land, also your seed will be counted. Rise, walk about in the land, according to its length, according to its width, for to you I will give it. And Avram tented, and came and sat by the oaks of Mamre, that are in Hebron, and he built there a slaughter place to Jehovah. Now, this translation is quite literal, as you can hear each week as we work through that. And although it might seem somewhat awkward at times, what we are trying to do is get you as close to looking at what the Hebrew literally says. So you're going to see the repetition of certain words that stand out in these texts that sort of carry the stories along. And one of the things that you'll notice is there are phrases such as, or words such as, set. You know, and he set here, and he set there. The word in Hebrew, yeshav, means to sit or to dwell. So it's like you would sit under your fig tree. It's like that's where you dwell. This is my place. I'm going to sit here. It's a place for sitting. You'll notice those kind of things, and I encourage you to look closely at that kind of thing. Our story today begins as we follow the bringings forth of Terah in this particular family. Our story begins with the call of Avram. The call of Avram. Now, chronologically, if you read the text, you would think that the call takes place in Haran. Excuse me. Right? So the family, Terah and all the two remaining sons and their women and the nephew and everybody moves to Haran, which is north. You know, they're going to move west, and then they're going to be situated north of the land of Israel, of the present-day land of Israel. That's where we're left off at the end of chapter 11. Not in Ur, they're in Haran. We have to think geography. Geography is very important. For instance, when I close the reading, God tells Avram, I want you to look northward. I want you to look Negevward. He means to the south. Now, most translations just translate it south. But Dave, right, what's the desert called? It's the Negev, right? So the Negev region in the south, whenever you read directional in the Hebrew Bible, put yourself in the land. So here's how you know where you're at. North, all right, up. And then Negevward, that's towards the south. And then east, a lot of times it will say, you know, to give you a certain geographical feature. And then west is going to be the Yam, the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, right? So these directions are important. Chronologically, the family of Terah is in Haran. Now, I want to use this to make a point. Later in the story, however, we're going to get this idea that the call is when they're in Ur, right? So I don't want to confuse. I want to make sure people understand this. Genesis 11 ends. They're in Haran. Genesis 12 begins. Lech lecha, walk for yourself. Go out from your father's house and so forth and so on. We think is that in Ur or is it in Haran? Now, let me show you something. Go to Genesis chapter 15. Genesis chapter 15, verse 7. See, someone should never give me just a small amount of scripture to look at, because we can dig really deep. All right, now listen. Genesis 15, 7. And he said unto him, I am Jehovah that brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees, to give you this land to inherit it. Literally, which caused you to go out from Ur of the Chaldees. Now, I want to focus for a minute on where was he at when he called him. So we're left in some ways to ponder. Now, perhaps one might think that Genesis 12 is recording a call that while recorded here actually took place previously when the family was still in Ur, before Terah died and before the whole family moved to Haran. This is how the writer of the book of Acts takes it. Some of you will be interested to hear this. If you have a Christian Bible, if you go to the book of Acts, I want to show you how the writer in the book of Acts explains this difficulty. This in setting, by the way, is the story of what we would say, I guess, are the last words of a martyr by the name of Stephen. And he says in Acts chapter 7, and Stephen said, chapter 7, verse 2, "Brethren and fathers, hear me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran." Notice that? You see that? "And said to him, depart from your land and from your kindred and go into the land that I will show you. Then he departed from the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran. After his father died, God removed him from there into this land in which you are now living." You see that? So what the writer of Acts is neatly explaining all the difficulties. All right? You see what he's trying to do? Because he's faced with the same difficulty we are. If you read in Genesis 12, you go, wait a minute. Lech lecha, walk for yourself from your father's land and so forth. He's already left his father's place. He's already left the land of his bringings forth. He's been out of Ur. What the writer of Acts chapter 7 is telling us, according, putting into the mouth of Stephen, if you will, in this speech, is that, let me explain to you what's going on, is what he's saying. He said, this call, the one that you read in chapter 12, actually took place when they were still in Ur of the Chaldees. You see what he's doing? All right. Now, I want you to go with me to the book of Nehemiah. The book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah. And I want to go to chapter 9. And I want to go to verse 7. Now, this is Nehemiah saying this. "Thou art Jehovah, the God who did choose Abraham," or Avram, "and brought him forth out of Ur of the Chaldees, and gave him the name Abraham, and found his heart faithful before you, and made a covenant with him to give the land of the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Perizzite, the Jebusite, the Girgashite, to give unto his seed, and have performed your words, for you are righteous." Notice, you called him out of Ur of the Chaldees. Now, and I'm not making a mountain out of a molehill, I just want to focus on the way our story comes across. You have to consider these other things in order to make it all work right. So you've got him in Ur of the Chaldees. What it seems in chapter 11 is that Terah gets the boys and their women and his nephew and says, let's go to towards Canaan. And they leave. But according to the behind-the-scenes story, as indicated here, that call of chapter 12 comes to Avram when they're in Ur. So we don't really know. Maybe there are things that it just doesn't tell us in the story. Did he say, hey, Dad, why don't we move towards Canaan? We just don't know that piece, right? But he didn't He didn't just pack up and leave. He went with his father, his whole family. Now, what happens according to Nehemiah chapter 9 is that this call that goes forth to Avram, what it ultimately leads to is a name change from Avram to Avraham, which we'll get into in the next few weeks, and a covenant that promises land to the seed of Avram. And this promise, it says, was kept because, ki tzadikata, because righteous are you. So Nehemiah is looking way back in history in his day. We're looking much further back than he is. But Nehemiah is looking at it and he says, this promise was fulfilled because God is righteous. Now, perhaps we could even go further, and we will develop this more fully in future classes on this, let's call it the Abrahamic cycle. We can assume then that Avram was chosen because what it says here in Nehemiah 9, his heart was found faithful. Now, I want to touch on this for just a second, because we're talking about a man named Avram. What set him apart? So when we talked about Noah, we did the same thing. What we want to do is we want to look at these characters and say, what is it that set them apart, and then how then should we live? So it says that he's faithful. Now, in the Hebrew, it's ne'eman. Ne'eman. You hear the word amen, amen. It's translated faithful. It means trusting, verity. Like if you verify something, if you give it a stamp of authenticity or you validate it. In Hebrew, that's what faith is. It's something that can be validated, something that can be verified, that can be trusted. It's not like you just hope for something. It's something real. There's something real about faith here. You can seal it. Now, he's faithful. I want you to look, if you're still in Genesis 15, let's go to Genesis 15, verse 6. I want to show you this. This, again, will be more fully developed in another class, but just to touch this idea. In English, it says, and he believed in Jehovah, and he reckoned it to him for righteousness. In Hebrew, it's he'emin. It's from the same root word. In other words, Avram is told this promise of having many children, and he trusted it. He believed in it. He trusted. He had confidence in. And it's counted to him as righteousness. So then later, when we go to Nehemiah chapter 9, we say, oh, what was it that set Avram apart? It's his faith. It's his trust. It was that he validated, he believed in. Okay, so what we know for sure, according to our text, is that Avram, a descendant of Shem, through Terah, comes from Ur of the Chaldees, from Mesopotamia, from what is defined in Scripture in some places as beyond the Euphrates. Beyond the Euphrates. According to tradition, Terah is an idolater. Now, according to tradition, notice my phrases that I'm using. According to tradition, Terah has an idol shop, and he makes and sells idols. And according to tradition, Avram doesn't want anything to do with this. And so he, various stories, you can look this up yourself. He crushes some idols, and he just wants to be separate than this idolatrous upbringing that he has been born into. But the ancients, now let me make this point. these ancient triennial cycle Torah readings, we have records. I've made a chart. You can download it on our website or from our website. They associated certain readings from the prophets with these Torah portions. So when we this week are introduced to the bringings forth of Terah, you know what passage that they associated with this particular reading? It's interesting. Open your Bibles to Joshua 24. Joshua chapter 24. Now, these are available on ancient lists that have survived. This is the prophetic text that's associated with this reading that we work through today. Verse 2, Joshua 24. And Joshua said unto all the people, thus says Jehovah, the God of Israel. Now, he's talking to the assembled nation of Israel. Please listen to this. Your fathers dwelt of old time beyond the river, even Terah, father of Abraham, the father of Nahor, and they served Elohim Acharim, other gods. Now, I've brought this up before and created a little bit of a stir, but stay with me here. The plural is used. They served Elohim Acharim. They served other gods. Now, outside of traditional beliefs, and I'm not a traditionalist. I think in many ways I'm unorthodox, and I've been called a lot worse. But what I want to do is I want to read what the text says. All right. So it doesn't mean that some of these traditions aren't beautiful and that they don't bring out great stories that can help us. But there's no mention in the Bible, if you find it, please send it to me, about an idol shop and all that, and Avram eschewing that lifestyle and leaving it. It just says this: children of Israel, your fathers, who are we talking about? Terah, and he had the boys Avram and Nahor. They lived on the other side of the river. And we have some pretty rough characters on the other side of the river here in Louisiana. We talk about them like this. And they served other gods. So aside from tradition, I have no reason to assume, and I have no text to support anything that comes by way of these traditions, other than to say, it could be, but I don't have anything that pushes me to state without equivocation that Avram is a solid monotheistic before he meets with Jehovah. I just don't have it. But stay with me. Perhaps this is the case. Perhaps it is. Perhaps he is in Ur of the Chaldees and everyone else is an idolater except him. Perhaps the plural, they served Elohim Acharim, is a reference to everyone but Avram. It could be. It could be that the plural, they served other gods, could be referring to Terah and Nahor and Haran before he died and all the other people of the place. We do have a precedent in that we know that Noah was righteous in his generation, that he stood out because he was different than everyone else. So it could be. I'm not saying it can't be. I'm just saying that it's interesting. Now, what we need to do then is we need to now begin to focus, because they cross from the other side of the river, from a place of idolatry, and the writer now wants us to focus on this figure of Avram. So I want you to go with me, if you would, to Isaiah 51, please. Isaiah 51. Isaiah 51, and let's just read verses 1 and 2, because this is a message to you and I relative to Avram. Hearken to me, you that chase after righteousness, you that seek Jehovah, look unto the rock whence you were hewn, and to the hold of the pit whence you were digged. Look to Abraham your father, and to Sarah that bare you. For when he was but one, I called him, and I blessed him, and made him many. The idea is that if you, and I hope that that you, plural, is all of you, if you are a chaser after righteousness, if you are a seeker of Jehovah, here's what you need to do. Look back. Look to Abraham and to Sarah. It's not just Abraham, it's Abraham and Sarah. Look back because, listen, he was but one when I called him. The focus at the time of the call was on one. Doesn't mean he was 1 year old, by the way. There's a different way to say that in Hebrew. It says he was just one. It's just him. It's Avram, Lech Lecha. It's go forth, walk for yourself. He's one and he becomes many. The beauty of the story as it unfolds is, yes, the focus was on one who ultimately became many. He, Avram, is at least from a culture and a family who served Elohim HaKarim. Let me tell you something about Avram. He's not Jewish. He's not Jewish. He's not, you can't even say he's an Israelite. All right? He's not Christian because he comes from way before Christianity and Judaism. He's not Muslim for certain. The idea that we get is that God is working in the lives of humans apart from these designations that we think in each respective case is the one way, the whole way, the only way. There is no other way to get to God but through this particular faith. But Avram knows none of this stuff. Hey, he's not circumcised, right? He's not. He doesn't wear tzitzit. He doesn't. I mean, you can list it on and on and on. He knows nothing of what comes later in the form of organized religion. He's just one. And he hears a voice that says, Lech Lecha, Avram, walk for yourself. Now, here's what I think. I think if you were in Avram's shoes and you looked around the Mesopotamian metropolis that he lives in, and there probably were shops full of idols, and there probably were various places of ill repute, and there it's like any big city, ancient or modern. Something Avram hears. Walk for yourself. Walk for yourself means don't be distracted. Don't be pulled into the ways of your neighbors. Listen to this voice, Avram. Leave everything. He's in many ways the father of all the faithful. Though he would not know anything about Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, all of those know him. Think about that. If Avram walked up today and you interviewed him and you'd say, well, what do you think about the current dispute in Judaism over women rabbis or what, you know, and you ask him all this, he would say, I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, what's your religion? I just hear the voice of the living God. You see the difference? It's so different. It's so different. Now to the call. Here's what he hears. Walk. Walk. Translated sometimes go.
But specifically, it's walk for yourself, lech lecha. Just like Enoch, just like Noah, he's in that line, you see. He's in that line where he hears a command to walk. Noah, it says, hitalek, he was caused to walk with the Elohim. Enoch walked with the Elohim. Noah walked with the Elohim. Later, we're going to hear the command to Avram, walk before me. Walk before me, which is interesting. It's slightly different. But this walk is such an integral part of what faith is supposed to be and that I will develop as we work through these particular people. Now, it's at this point, it's very important for me to clearly define for you the walk more in terms of what he is to walk away from than what he is to walk in, okay? In other words, here's the way you go, what's the walk? What does that mean? In Hebrew, we say halakha. The walk is what that means, basically. So in Orthodox Judaism, when one says they follow halakha, it means they follow the walk, basically. This is the way they understand the walk. So here's the way Avram understood the walk in his day. Get this. Ready? From your land. I want you to walk from your land, from your family or your kindred, and, you know, sort of a broad sense, from your people, and from your father's house, which is sort of an intimate, smaller group of family. And basically, what he's telling him is, you have to walk away from everything with which you are familiar. And listen to me, I want you to think about this because I believe that in order for us to be as Avram, when it says to look to Avram, if you're really chasing righteousness, if you really seek after Jehovah, listen to this and you write this down, you better start thinking about how is it I have to walk away from everything. You've got to leave the familiar if you're going to hear from God. This is what I believe. I think we have to put aside all those things, at least temporarily, while we look at what the Bible says. You're going to walk away. And if Avram said, he didn't. He did not say this, but this is me taking the story out. If he would have said, where are we going? Could you please provide me with a list of benefits of this walk? Would you mind telling me? Because it's like a long walk, you know, it sounds like you're asking me to go a long way. And I've got my wife and I've got my kids and I've got, you know, what about my dad? I mean, I got to bring everybody and I got my nephew and you know what God tells him? Sorry, you don't get any of that. You're going to go to a place that I'll show you. Listen, this is sight unseen. You don't get to know where you're going. I can tell you, and I think for most of you as well, my faith walk has been difficult in many ways and on many days because I don't know. I don't care. I don't care where this path leads so long as it leads to truth, so long as it leads to something real. I'm through playing in all these various options, these pick-a-pack that's already, here's your whole package, you have to buy it wholesale, and I'm thinking, you know, that just doesn't fit for me. I speak as a man. Someone said that once. So you can't know where you're going. He says, I'm going to bring you to a land that I will show you, or literally, as the TEB brings out, that I will make you see. But there are benefits. You ready for them? Here they are. He says, I'm going to make of you, Avram, a goy gadol, a great nation. Tabor translates large nation. It's great in the sense of gadol means big. Big. It's a big deal. It's a big nation. It's big. It's big. It's big. Gadol. He's going to make you a goy gadol. And So there are seven of these. You can put numbers 1 through 7 and fill them in as we go. Goy Gadol, I'm going to make you a great nation. Number 2, and I will bless you. And number 3, I will make your name great. Number 4 is a command. All right, so he gives him 3 benefits. I'm going to make you a great nation, I'll bless you, and I'm going to make your name great. Now, here's what you need to do, Avram. Ready? You be a blessing. I love this. You be a blessing. Now, what happens if you're a blessing? If you're a blessing, I'm taking these in order, and this is my reading of it. Number 5, I will bless those who bless you. In other words, if you're being a blessing, now it's not conditional in the text, this is just my reading of it, so bear with me. If you're following this, if you accept this package, this is your mission if you choose to accept it. If you take this and you're a blessing, God says, I will bless those who bless you. Because you got to be a blessing, see? So then when you be a blessing and they bless you, I'll bless them. It's all connected. Now look at this. He says further that I will curse those who treat you lightly. In Hebrew, in fact, heavy is used quite a bit even in this Torah reading. It says the famine was heavy. You know, it's like it's heavy. It's heavy in the land. So when one treats you lightly, we know what that means even in our culture. If someone says, oh, you're nothing. You know, if I treat you like you're lightly, God says he'll curse. I'll curse those who treat you lightly. Better take them as weighty. By the way, the word kavod that's translated heavy is often associated with glory. So there's an even deeper meaning there, I think. Kaved. Now, here's number 7. All the families of the earth will be blessed in you. All the families of the earth will be blessed in you. Here's something to think about. The blessings that come to Avram, the promises, they lead to benefits, literally, get this, to all the families of the earth. Now, Avram, it would have been enough, maybe for Avram, if he would have just been told, look, I'm going to bring you to a nice place to live out of all this idolatry. And I'm going to set you up and you're going to be, you're going to raise your kids right and it's going to be a nice neighborhood. And he says, listen, I'm taking you from Ur of the Chaldees. I'm bringing you into a place that you've not even seen. And I'm going to make you a great nation. And I'm going to bless you. And I'm going to make you a great name. And you be a blessing. And I'm going to bless those who bless you. Those who treat you lightly, I'm going to curse. And look at this. All the nations of the earth will be blessed in you. Not only is it wonderful news for Avram, it's wonderful news for the world. Because Avram will never be able to focus just on himself, as we'll see in the coming classes. And you know what it says in 12:4, in Genesis 12:4? Because it starts with walk for yourselves. Walk for yourself. And it says in verse 4, very simply, and Avram walked. And Avram walked. What we noticed when we worked through the readings associated with the life of Noah is that Noah is commanded and he does. Avram, like Noah, is commanded and he does. And he walks and he arrives in a place called Shechem. He's in the promised land. It was unseen. It is now seen. After considerable narrative, I'm going to go through and just hit some high points that we can discuss later, perhaps. There's a famine. There is the lie to Pharaoh. he tells, remember, you know, remember the story, which I know a lot of people go, well, that's kind of weird. Sarai, look, I know you're gorgeous. When they see you, they're going to kill me. They're going to take you. So tell them. So we get through that. We'll run right over that. There's tension between the herdsmen, resulting in the separation of Avram and Lot. Lot gets the choice. He chooses the entire circuit of the Jordan. The beautiful, he chooses the choice, if you will, the choice place of habitation. I want to go to Genesis 13, beginning in verse 14. Genesis 13, 14. And Jehovah said unto Avram, after the separation of Lot from him, lift, please, your eyes, and see from the place there where you are, northward and Negevward and eastward and seaward, for all the land that you are seeing, I will give it to you and to your seed until an age, and I will place your seed as the dust of the land, so that if a man is able to count the dust of the land, also your seed will be counted. Rise up, walk about in the land according to its length and according to its width, for to you I will give it. North, south, east, west. Look, Avram, look around. All of this I'm going to give to you and to your seed. This is the promise. Ad olam, an indeterminate period. But there's a problem. And there's a problem because Sarai is barren. And this is where we get into one of, I think, a great departure in understanding for many, many people. And while I have to be, or I try to be very respectful of other beliefs, I have to tell you that this one, this particular belief is troubling to me on a very big level, a gadol level, because it's caused much confusion among people who seek to understand the Bible's message. And the question becomes, who is the promised seed? Sarai is barren. And so we have a promised seed that he says, to your seed. I mean, if you notice, there are two places in this Torah reading, and it's going to be repeated throughout the next several Torah readings, this promise to the seed. You know, now people are going to allegorize, and I'm going to talk about that for a few minutes because I need you to get this straight. But when he says, I'm going to bring you to a land, even though Avram hasn't seen the land, did the land turn out to be a real land? Yeah. So literal, I'm going to take you from here, I'm going to bring you to there. So if someone later in a religious setting says that the land that's promised is not the earth, or it's in heaven or whatever, then you ought to know that that's not at all what the Bible's saying. But the thing I'm going to focus on today is the promised seed. I want to focus on that for just a second. So please understand, I know that some people who listen in are in some shape, form, or fashion Christian, and you are welcome here, and your views are important to me, so don't run away when I get into this, because it's very important for you to see this part. Christianity, based off of an analogy or an allegory attributed to Paul, understands that the promised seed that we read about in Genesis 12 and 13 is looking forward to a Messiah figure, which Paul would quickly and easily call Christ Jesus. That the promised seed that these promises are given to is Jesus, okay? So what I want to do is I want to pick up from the book of Galatians what Paul says here. So if you will bear with me, I'll show you something that I see as problematic. Galatians 3. In Galatians 3, I won't go into the whole chapter, but beginning in verse 16, Galatians 3:16 says, "Now the promises were made to Abraham and to his offspring." It does not say, I'm still reading, "and to offsprings," plural, referring to many, but referring to one, "and to your offspring, which is Christ." Okay? Everybody follow me. Paul's point in this, in Galatians 3:16, is that the promise to Avram and to his seed, when it talks about seed, he makes a deal when he goes through this, he makes a big deal to say, it doesn't say offsprings, plural, like a bunch of people. It talks about one seed, which is Christ. Now, so that means, according to Paul, that what we read in Genesis 12 and 13 is a prediction of this going to the one to whom it belongs, which is a single heavenly figure. But is that true? The question becomes, is that true? If you look at Genesis chapter 13, verse 16, I just want to read that one more time. Let me back up. Let's read what I just read again, verse 14 on. Jehovah said to Avram after the separation of Lot from him, "Lift, please, your eyes and see from the place there where you are, north and northward and Negevward and eastward and seaward. For all the land that you are seeing, I will give it to you and to your seed until an age. And I will place your seed." I will place your seed in the sense of establish is what that means. "As the dust of the land, so that if a man is able to count the dust of the land, also your seed will be counted." Now let me ask you something. Does it sound like, even at all, that what is being described in the promise of the seed is talking about a single person, no matter who that person is? Or is it referring to the promises belong to a group? Yes, the latter. If you're struggling with that, it's the latter, because he wants to make the point, look, Avram, come out here. When I talk about your seed, I want you to understand, look, and Dave, when we were in the desert, would you think if I talked about the sand of the sea and the dust of the earth, you think I'm talking about one, or having been in the desert, is it a lot? It's a lot. So the idea here, and this is what's been troubling and I think confusing for many people, is that the promise is not to a single figure, eschatological, from the heavens or anything like that, no matter who you put as that figure. The promise is to the seed of Avram, which represents countless. In other words, if a person could count all the dust of the earth, you'd know how many seed we're talking about. Is that what it says? It's what it says. Okay. Jehovah chose Avram, calls him to leave that with which he's familiar, to go to a place unseen, a place from which Jehovah would bring about literally the miracle of the ages, transforming an aged man who has a barren wife into a goy gadol, a great nation, whose seed would be like the sand of the sea, for number, like the dust of the earth. This is the promise. It is nothing short of miraculous. It is the most incredible story of our time and all the ages. And it begins to unfold in the coming weeks, because this seed, this promised seed representing the descendants who can't be counted of Abraham, they have a task, which we also will get into, a task whose greatest, the greatest way we can describe this is that the task of the seed of Abram, representing untold countless numbers of people, is to bring blessing to all the families of the earth. Shabbat shalom.